Welcome to the Judas Priest Cast Metal Maniacs. I'm Jay. We have Jeff over here. And we have a very special guest who has interacted with Jeff. I've never met this fine person, so I'm going to meet her right now. So, Jeff, take it away. Who do we have today on the big show?
We have Tracy. She is a Twitter mutual of me and a bunch of my friends, and every interaction with her has been pleasurable, and then I get nice feedback from other people. We both, you said you're a digital artist, and you're an incredible artist, Tracy.
Thank you.
And one of our friends has bought one of your paintings, or you sent it to him.
So I Crunch sent Crisco. It to him, yes.
That was very nice. That was that particular art piece of art reminded me a lot of a Catatonia cover called Last Fair Deal Gone Down, and I really, really liked it. So, Tracy, welcome to the Judas Priest Cast.
Thanks. So, hi, my name is Tracy, and I am a vinyl collector. Like you said, I'm an artist, but primarily I'm a vinyl collector. I'm a student right now, so I don't have to work. I can listen to music all day if I want to.
Lucky.
Very nice. Very nice.
I know, right? I have about 700 to 800 pieces of vinyl.
Wow.
And that's full albums and 12-inch singles. So that's not counting the 45s. Wow. I'll tell you a little story about how I got into that. I found on Craigslist, I wanted to start collecting vinyl way back in like 2008. And I said, I'm going to start collecting vinyl. And I went to look on Craigslist, and I knew somebody would be selling some. And I found this lady who was selling 8 boxes of vinyl for $150.
Holy crap, that's a steal.
I know, right? So I jumped on that. Luckily, I had a boyfriend with a truck at the time, and we went and picked that up. And I just kind of cherry-picked, you know, a few things just to see what was in there. And it was Heart and, like, Menudo, but it was still sealed, and it had Ricky Martin on the cover. And I was like, oh, I can get a pretty penny for this.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And, nice. So I took the whole thing, and that was the start of my gigantic collection. And it ended up being about 600 pieces. And I had well over 1,100 pieces at one time. I donated a lot of the ones that I got from her to the library. Older stuff, you know, and like stuff from the 50s and 60s, you know, that we just don't listen to anymore, like, you know, How to Dance and that kind of stuff. So I donated all that to the library so I could cut down on my collection, but it's still pretty out of control.
I don't think it's out of control at all.
I'm a vinyl hoarder, I should say. Not a collector, I'm a hoarder.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and I tried to turn it into a business because the thing I love the most in life is sharing music with other people. On Friday and Saturday nights, I've moved it over to Blue Sky. I don't do it on Twitter anymore, but I post videos. You know, we have a theme for the night, and I post music videos for everybody to watch. So, and I get good feedback on that, but I wanted to open a business. And so we did the LLC thing, and I did it the right way, and I made our taxes really complicated. And, we didn't really have the customer base for it. I just couldn't, after a couple of years, I couldn't justify keeping it open anymore. And I mean, I had a great, I had vaultvinyl.com. You know, that was a great domain to have. I still have that on Twitter, but it's just, you know, sleeping dormant. But the one thing that paid for that entire collection while I was selling, I met this guy who was on Discogs. I don't know if y'all are familiar with Discogs.
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. And he approached me and said, and he's a completist. And I don't know if you know what a completist is, but they got to have every single thing by that artist.
Gotcha.
And so he says, you have the one thing that I have been looking for that I couldn't find. And it was a test pressing by Ultravox that just happened to be in that box, because this I guess these boxes came from her ex-boyfriend, who was a DJ back in the day. So there was a lot of like test pressings and, you know, just really obscure stuff in there. And I ended up selling that Ultravox test pressing for $700.
Score.
Yeah. Yeah. So that paid for all my vinyl habit for a bit.
Yeah, no kidding. Jeez. Was it Vienna? Or you have no memory?
I don't even remember which one it was.
Okay. That song gives me the creeps. Bothers me, that song. I don't know exactly why, but it's awful. All right. So you don't really enjoy, you don't have much of a metal overlap with us.
I don't.
What have you heard of Judas Priest? Anything?
Well, I'm sure that as old as I am, I have heard probably all the Judas Priest songs there are, but the only one that comes to mind right now is Turbo Lover. because I love that video so much.
Nice, yeah.
Yeah. So that's about my extent of exposure to Judas Priest, mostly just in passing, because during that, when they were popular, I wasn't into that type of music, so.
Yeah. So what do you listen to?
I am not going to be one of those people that say everything, because that's definitely not true. I don't listen to country.
Okay, smart.
Yeah, can't handle it. I would start with my favorites are Joy Division, The Cure, The Smiths, New Order, of course. You know, really on the alternative side. And I've been listening to alternative and new wave since I was probably about 6 or 7. You know, my favorite bands at that point were, they were still considered alternative because they hadn't made it mainstream yet, but like Duran Duran, which I know you've been to one of their shows.
Uh-huh.
Jeff.
Enjoy it thoroughly.
Great show. I've seen them twice. Nice. And like Human League, Blondie, you know, they were all still kind of in their infancies at that point when I was starting to get into it. So, but yeah, generally alternative and new wave from the 80s. I am getting into dark wave, which is more modern stuff, but it's really gothy and mopey stuff. I was one of those girls in high school that wore all black and had black eyeliner, dyed my hair black, and you know, worshiped Robert Smith. And so that's, and I still wear black right now. I've got black jeans on and a black Morrissey t-shirt on, so.
Very cool. All right. My you're aware, my tastes run to the doomier, the more melancholic forms of metal. But I also have a very very big soft spot for The Smiths, The Cure, Depeche Mode, Duran Duran. If it's dark, if it's moody, I like it. So, mm-hmm. Saw Depeche Mode also this year, along with Duran Duran. I've seen Morrissey himself live. I won't go to a concert again because he's a dick, but
yeah,
love his music. And the Smiths in particular they're mind blowing. That 4-album discography, and it's 6 if you want to include like The World Isn't Enough and Louder Than Bombs.
Right,
just
right.
Brilliant. There's like 3 Smith songs I don't like. The 3. That's it. And one with a cover.
What was the first Smiths album that you heard, or do you remember the first Smiths song? I got turned on to Louder Than Bombs because I was trying to talk to this guy who I had a crush on, and we were trying to figure out what to talk about. And I'm like, so what kind of music do you listen to? And he's like, well, I've been listening to the Smiths a lot lately, and man, took my happy ass right up to the record store and got Louder Than Bombs. So that was my first exposure to the Smiths.
My first was the How Soon Is Now song. It's just ubiquitous, and Paradise Lost did a cover of it, which is brilliant. And then But even at that time, I was still like, oh, it's not really metal. It's not metal. It's not, no guitars. Right. Being elitist. And then I think it was shortly after that. I think it was actually after Paradise Lost did the cover that I started looking at it a little bit differently. And the first album, full album I bought was Meat Is Murder. Still my favorite of theirs. There's a song on there, and I can't think of the name of it. It's going to bug me. But it's very simple, and it's just got an incredible bass line, and it's not Rush on Ruffians. It's not one of the main tracks. That's going to bug me. I want to say it starts with a W. I'm actually going to have to look this up because this is bugging the shit out of me.
This is good podcasting right here,
Well,
man.
I wonder. Well, I wonder. We can edit it. Seriously, it's one of my favorite songs. I can't remember the damn name of it. I'm an idiot. So, yeah, that was my first, and I loved that album. Then I think I went directly to Queen Is Dead and then went back to the debut, which was a little bit of a shock because it sounds very, very different. The production level is so not bad, but it's definitely raw.
Exactly. And
then, went to Strange Ways.
Yeah.
Rawer.
Rawer.
I did have friends in high school who, like one of my best friends in high school was a metalhead, but he also liked The Smiths and The Cure. It took me forever before I was able to actually turn around and actually start listening to it and seeing it for what it is instead of being a snotty little 15-year-old going, no, it's not heavy. But now, Morrissey, like I said, I've seen him. I believe I've seen him like 5 or 6 times live.
Wow. I've seen him once.
He puts on a great show.
Yeah. Yeah. Interpol opened for him. So that was a double bucket list for me.
Damn. Nice show.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my addiction, really, is besides vinyl, is going to concerts. I just went to the Kills. Let's see, that was just about 3 weeks ago. We went and saw the Kills, and I love them. She's out of Alison Mossart. I have a huge crush on her. She is out of this world. So
I have no idea who the Kills are.
Oh, well, you should look them up.
Okay,
Look them up, man. Female singer, that's right in my zone.
Yeah, they're a duo that they're amazing. They started out collaborating. Jamie was in London and she was in LA, and they would send cassettes back and forth to write songs together. So that's how they started out. I always thought that was
wow.
Cool factoid.
Yeah, old school, totally old school.
Yeah.
So this must have been what, 80s?
No, they've been popular since, let's see, when did Midnight Boom come out? Oh, 2007, I think.
Oh.
So they're not that old of a band.
Ah, but still did the whole cassette thing.
Cassette thing, yeah. Well, you know, we're all aging hipsters, right?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right.
Did they mail it or send it by carrier pigeon?
The Kills. Okay, we're gonna have to check them out. So both the ladies sing. They trade off, or?
Oh, it's a guy and a girl.
Oh, a guy and a girl. Oh, okay.
Uh huh.
Okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. Yeah, and he mostly does backup.
Oh, okay.
For her. She does most of the singing, so.
And you said the singer is Alison Mossart. Is she famous otherwise?
No, other than like hanging out with supermodels.
Okay.
She's not been. Oh no, I take that back. She's been in a side project with Jack White called The Dead Weather.
Oh wow.
Which is really, really awesome. I like them a lot. It was a little bit edgier. You know, insert Jack White, and it got a little edgier than Kills stuff. So, but yeah, and really anything Jack White, I'll listen to. So,
yeah, I dig Jack White. Totally dig him.
Yeah, Dead Weather. If you haven't heard of them, definitely check them out.
I will definitely have to.
Yeah.
So that that big box of records you got and your subsequent collection now, what is your favorite? What is your most prized vinyl?
Oh, I should have known you were going to ask me this question.
No, not really, because I didn't even know I was going to ask you this question.
I would probably say I've got several different bootleg copies in different colors of, because I like to collect colored vinyl too, as Jeff well knows. It's The Queen Is Dead, and that's for sure is my favorite. It has to be. So wow. I have some questionable copies of Unknown Pleasures by Joy Division. I actually might get a tattoo of that cover one day. If I ever get a tattoo, that's what it's going to be. But yeah, I would say between Unknown Pleasures and The Queen Is Dead, those have to be my best ones.
Those are two fantastic albums. Unknown Pleasures is it's mind blowing how good Joy Division was.
Yeah.
Shame about Ian Curtis, but we did get New Order afterward.
That's right. That's right. My favorite New Order song is Ceremony, which is the bridge between Joy Division and New Order, because that was the last one that they actually wrote with Ian.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't listen to that without tearing up a little bit.
I can understand. Jay, you're probably not all that familiar with Joy Division. They are a extremely dark band. You may have heard Love Will Tear Us Apart, just a classic sound. So Jay has some homework to do. The Dead Weathermen, yeah, and Joy Division.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, you guys are talking foreign languages to me. I'm just sitting back enjoying the ride. I have no idea. But, you know, that's my limited musical knowledge. Yeah. I know Judas Priest and Black Sabbath. That's and Led Zeppelin. That's about it.
Hey, that's still a good foundation.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
you chose three good bands to know.
Yeah, I have the Mothership box set. I haven't even opened yet. It's still sealed.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
That's a nice one. So you ever going to open it, or are you going to keep it sealed?
I think I'm going to keep it sealed.
Cool.
So much of my stuff is still sealed that I did not get from the DJ lady. I just collect the vinyl just to have the vinyl, and I don't put much on my turntable. I'm really kind of a Spotify addict because I just don't want to risk scratching it. Like, we got an editor's, God bless my husband, I love him so much, but we got an editor's record, and the first time we listened to it, he backed up his chair and accidentally hit the table.
Oops.
that the turntable was on, and it scratched the whole the last song, the last track on that side. And I was just like, and he's like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I know how you are about your vinyl. Like, he handles them with white gloves on.
Aww.
He knows how I am about it. So.
Well, y'all are still married, so.
Yes.
Couldn't have been that bad.
No. I'm like, okay, I have a lot of vinyl, babe, and it's not like they're my favorite band in the world. I mean, I like them a whole lot, but it's not like it was Joy Division or The Smiths, and then we might be talking something different.
So those are your two favorite bands?
Yeah, think? For sure. Okay. With awesome. The Cure. That's my top three, The Cure, The Smiths, and Joy Division, for sure.
All right, so you've seen Morrissey live.
Yes.
Have you seen New Order live?
I have not, but I got to see Depeche Mode this year as well.
Oh, the same tour I saw?
Yes. Yeah, Michael Mori. Yes.
Yeah.
Really loved their video for Ghost Again. Came out right around the time my dad died, so that song really hit a nerve with me. So seeing that live after that was just... I cried through the whole song.
Understandable.
Yeah
definitely.
They were outstanding. I mean, and I thought, you know, because I've seen like psychedelic furs recently. I saw them last year. You never know when you see an older band if they're really going to have the chops left, you know, to do it,
right,
pull it off. And like psychedelic furs, they sounded exactly like they did back in the day. I mean, to a T. And I was so impressed with Depeche Mode. I mean, David Gahan can still pull it off. So,
yeah. And Martin actually still sounds really cool. I think he only did one song as lead at my show, but he's mm-hmm. he still sounded great. He's so amazing. So Martin Gore writes all the songs and everything, and occasionally takes lead vocals, and he plays most of the instruments on the recordings. I'm saying this for Jay because he needs to catch up.
yeah, I'm
foreign and so. Language. David Gahan sings most of the bigger hits that you know, but for some reason, Martin always seems to pick the song to take lead vocals on that really tug at my heartstrings. He did a show called Home, or he did a song called Home off the, I think it was the Ultra album, and that's a song that will always bring me tears. It's a fucking brilliant song.
Yeah.
Have you seen The Cure live?
I did. I saw The Cure live last year. For the first time. That was an amazing show. It was an outdoor amphitheater. So at this venue, I hate this venue. And the only reason I went, it was because of The Cure, because it's like they have lawn seating and it's really hot in Texas. That's where I'm at. So I hate outdoor shows. But we had seats, pretty good seats up close. And, you know, Robert made sure he walked to the ends of both stages or at the both ends of the stage so that, you know, we could all get our little pictures of him up close as much as we could. But it was an outstanding, outstanding show.
Very cool.
So what's the best show you've ever been to, you think?
I would say it's the Morrissey Interpol show, just because I got to see both of them.
Awesome.
Good choice. All right. So I had an experience a few weeks ago that was me going to a concert. And it was probably one of the best weekends of my life and probably one of the best concerts I've ever seen. It was super cool. Went to go see Restless Spirit up in Atlanta. They were headlining finally, and small little venue. I got to go up. I drove up and then stayed in Atlanta, met up with two of my friends from Twitter, got to meet them, and they were better than advertised. They're two of my favorite people on Twitter, and then meeting them in person was even better. And then got to hang out with the guys from Restless Spirit. Got to see them do a longer show, like an hour 15, I think is what they played. And they blew my fucking mind. And they did, they played my favorite song of theirs, Crooked Timber of Humanity. I actually got to hear it twice live because they played it as part of their sound check. And we did have Paul from Restless Spirit on our podcast here, and I just can't express in words how much fun that show was. I can't even remember right now how much it, everything that happened, but between hanging out with the band, meeting the two people from Twitter that were incredible, and seeing that show, and seeing two other really good bands, it just fucking blew my mind. And every time I think about it, I just get a big ass smile and like chills and shit that run down. It's just fucking incredible. So thank you to Restless Spirit. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Mark. It was just another incredible experience seeing them.
Awesome. I will have to check them out. I've never heard of them.
They're not a death metal band by any stretch, but they are a doom metal band. Crunchy riffs with a little bit of like they have a lot of dynamics in their music, which makes it exciting. So there'll be a nice heavy riff, and then all of a sudden it's in like a nice major chord high, a happy thing, and it's they're fucking incredible. One of my favorite bands.
That's the Reader's Digest version.
Yeah.
we spoke on the phone as we do every week after that experience, and there, man, you talked for about an hour with passion, all the different things that happened, the drive up there, the behind the scenes stuff. I guess you're gonna keep that to yourself, but
yeah, it's kind of also like now I'm on the spot. I don't have any notes about what happened, so my brain is just like freaking out, going, "Hey, it was good. Boom, just say that." It's like,
yeah, yeah.
Okay, brain, help me out.
You are so giddy. I mean, it was like you're walking on clouds when you're telling the story. The emotions. I mean, you may have been crying for all I know.
I might have been. But I am going to go see them again in a few weeks, and that'll be fucking great. Jay, can you tell us? So Priest is now touring around. And yep. We're going to have a guy who's going to go to one of the shows coming up. We're going to have him on our podcast next week. It'll be return of our associate podcaster or associate host, Kinky Sam. And
not Kinky. You're going to give him the wrong impression. Give people the wrong impression.
Kinky Sam.
Kinky Sam.
Yeah.
I think it's a character on a video game, right?
I don't know. I thought it was Kinky for like the longest time, but I'm an idiot. I thought Tracy was a guy for, you know, for five months I knew her. So,
Far from it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That usually happens.
Kinky Sam. I think he told me once, and it's a video game, and I don't remember. Maybe Mike Tyson Punch Out, maybe? I'm not sure.
That could be.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, so the Priest is done with the first leg of the Invincible Shield tour. They just finished up at the time we're recording here. Now, the second leg is going to be in the old U.S. of A., and that starts April 18th, which is this Thursday, in Wallingford, Connecticut, which is where Sam and George, two mutuals of ours, both great people, and that's where they're going to see the Priest. And then Reading, Pennsylvania on the 21st, another good friend of ours, Squashy, is going to go to that show, so we'll probably get a report from him. But apparently the tour went really well, sold out most of the shows from what I hear. Now I was looking up this Wallingford. I believe it's called the Toyota Oakdale Center, and it only holds 4,800 from what I've seen online. So that's going to be a intimate show. And since it's a theater, the sound is probably going to be amazing. So
yeah, I bet.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the small theaters, a lot more intimate, and it seems to always sound better, you know, and there's no room for a big mosh pits or anything like that. Not that Priest fans, you know, us, you know, 50, 60 year olds going to the Priest shows would get into a mosh pit, but hey, you never know. So the last show here on this leg is going to be May 22nd. Then they're going to go over to Europe for the festivals, and then they're coming back in October, I know, and whatever the month, September, yeah, late September, going to be in Sacramento, I believe, or maybe that's early October in Sacramento. Anyway, they're going to play two festivals here in October and November, and then we'll see what's going to happen. They don't have anything planned for after that, but me being up here in the Pacific Northwest, nothing is scheduled, but I'm sure that's on the agenda. Hopefully, after those September, October shows, of course, they'll probably want to take some time off. They are getting on in age. They'll probably want to take the holiday season off, which I'm guessing. So hopefully, after that, I'll be able to see them. But another interesting thing is the set list. And I'm hoping that on the U.S. leg, they might throw out a couple more deep cuts. But they already have played quite a few deep cuts and some that are really interesting. So they usually have the staples, you know, Another Thing Coming, Breaking the Law, Turbo Lover, your favorite one, Tracy, Living After Midnight, Painkiller, Metal Gods. They played on every show, Hellbent for Leather, of course, Green Man Lishi, and every show on the first leg, they played Lightning Strike and Saints in Hell. And then all the other songs they have in rotation. It's usually a 17 or 18 set or song set list. A lot of the other songs that are rotating through are Rapid Fire, Love Bites, Devil's Child, Victim of Changes, Electric Eye they brought out, Sinner, which I love. You Don't Have to Be Old to Be Wise, which is a cool deep cut. They hadn't played that in quite a while. And big surprise, Sword of Damocles, they brought out, which is interesting, an interesting deep cut. So that's really cool. They played Screaming for Vengeance, Beyond the Realms of Death. And then from the new Invincible Shield, they played Panic Attack, Crown of Horns, the title track, Invincible Shield, and Trial by Fire. So I'm sure we're going to get the staples and probably those four songs from Invincible Shield, although hopefully they'll kind of change up the Invincible songs that they play. They seem to play four, which is cool, but maybe they'll play Serpent and the King or, you know, something else. Hopefully Escape from Reality, which is my favorite song.
Yeah, off mine of too. Album.
Yeah, so that'd be really cool. But exciting times, especially with set lists and how many deep cuts they rotate in and out. So it's always fun. And all the shows in Europe, the set list was never the exact same, which is really cool. You have a lot of bands that come and go that have a set list. They stick to the set list. You know, so if you see them multiple times on a tour, you're seeing the same exact songs over
right.
and over.
Right.
No fun. No fun at all. So looking forward to that. And, of course, we'll have Sam on to tell us all about it. And he's the one that him and George that we know of. And probably there's plenty of other mutuals. Anyway, they're going to see it in that Toyota Oakdale Center in Wallingford, Connecticut. And that would be the place to see if it, in fact, I looked up the right place and it is a smaller venue holding 4,800. That would be killer. I think the sound would be incredible. Invincible Shield is doing great as far as album sales. They were number one when it first came out, number one debut on Billboard, number two in UK, the highest chart position ever for them. Germany, number one. Finland, Yo Villa, number one. Sweden, number one. Switzerland, number one. And Japan, Yo Gen, what's up? Number one as well. So that's really cool. Exciting stuff. They're selling well. The album's selling well. The album's being received really well. These cats over 50 years on are still delivering the goods. And I couldn't be happier. Couldn't be happier. And all the stuff on YouTube I see of the shows, Rob sounds great. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could hear his age a little bit, but hell, he's 72 years old. What do you want from the guy? but yeah, still sounds incredible. Incredible. So hopefully I'll be able to see him this time around. So have crossed my fingers for some dates that I can attend. But April, some albums of The Priest came out. Sin After Sin came out this month in 77. British Steel came out this month in 1980, and Jeff's favorite album.
Yay. There's been way too much Turbo talk on this episode.
Yes. Jeff's favorite Turbo came out. The Wikipedia and the books I read are different on the date. So some say it was the 11th, some say it was last week. Who knows? I was alive at the time and bought it when it came out, but I don't remember dates. That was a long time ago. But yeah, Sin After Sin, which is the third release, one of my favorite Priest records, is probably number two right behind Sad Wings of Destiny. And it was the first major label release for Priest. Their first two records were released by a small record company, as we know, called Gull. And Gull was a poor label and gave Priest really no financial or marketing support. In fact, all the members of Priest had to take on day jobs while they're, you know, after Rock-a-Rolla. So they asked Gull, and this is actually after Sad Wings of Destiny, too. They went in and asked the president of Gull Records if they could each get a fiver a week so they could continue on. And, of course, Gull told them no. I mean, these guys made two kick-ass records, and they're still, you know, they still have to have day jobs. I mean, no support from the label. I mean, $5 a week, you think that's asking too much? But so, yeah, that pissed them off. But they got a break. They were signed by CBS Records and received a £60,000 advance. KK said those were hard times. We were going between record companies, changing producers, changing studios. We were still struggling to get the band sound onto record. CBS brought in Deep Purple bassist Roger Glover. He was an up-and-coming producer, had produced a lot of stuff already. Excellent. So they brought him in. After a couple days, of course, the Priest, in all their wisdom, fired Roger because they wanted to go it alone because they're the mighty Judas Priest now. And we have £60,000 in our pocket, and we are going to go it alone. Well, they fucked around for a while and realized firing Roger was a huge mistake. So they rang him up with their tail between their legs and brought him back. And when Roger came back, he said, you know, play me what you got. And they played it, and Roger said it was horrible. It was awful. And by this time, they only have the studio booked up for a certain amount of time, so there are only 6 days left after all the bullshit they went through. So Roger said, well, we got 6 days left, and we're going to get Simon Phillips, because the drumming wasn't working out with Alan Moore. Simon was a session drummer who'd worked with Roger on several occasions. He was only 17 or 18 at the time. And Simon Phillips is a badass drummer. He brought the double kick drumming into Sin After Sin, which is revolutionary. And Simon Phillips said of Sin After Sin, it was the beginning of heavy metal. And I agree with him. Mm-hmm. Killer album. The chugging, the gallop all started there and had a lot to do with Simon Phillips, which is interesting. Then, of course, British Steel. And I'm just going to read a couple things about British Steel straight out of our good buddy Martin Popoff's book here. All through the 70s, we were journeymen, really. We were trying to build, trying to get the acceptance of metal. The reason why this particular album, British Steel, is such a special album is because with Judas Priest, whatever you want to call it, luck or judgment or talent, the timing was right. Timing is very important, I've always said, in music anyway. British Steel was the... British Steel was the exact perfect record for once Judas Priest fucking got it right. The timing was right for the record, more so than any of our other records. And that's a quote from KK.
One of the wonderful memories that I think we all have about Judas Priest is 1980 Seconds Rob Halford, because here we had the start of a new decade. You look at what happened in 1980 alone with all the other releases that were happening. It's a remarkable year. It definitely is the new wave of British heavy metal movement. By then, of course, we had a few records established, but British Steel has become a masterpiece for a lot of people in metal for lots and lots of different reasons. But I think it's a case of a band truly finding their defining sound. We also at last had found the look and the imagery. It was kind of filtering in with Hellbent for Leather, to some extent Killing Machine, but by the time we were into British Steel, we'd got it. We knew absolutely everything about who we were, what we were trying to do, and who we were trying to be. So Tom Allom, this is the second time actually that they worked with Tom Allom, and they'd continue on throughout the 80s to work with Tom Allom. But Tom came in and did the ran the board and did the production for Unleashed in the East, which is a live record, but Rob live. Did live with quotations, but you know, Rob, the music is live. They didn't alter any of the music, but Rob came in and sang all the vocals, because at the time of the recording originally, he had some say laryngitis, but I don't know. But he didn't sound very good. So he came in and recorded all the vocals in one take, and that was Tom Allom and producing, and they were so happy with that, with Tom. He'd just done Def Leppard's On Through the Night, Tom Allom did. He was a hot producer at the time, and it only took 4 weeks to record British Steel. In and out, boom, boom, boom. It was done at Starling Studio. It was Ringo Starr's home studio, which is interesting. Wow. Yeah. So that's a little bit about British Steel. And of course, British Steel is the album that really put Judas Priest on the map, really gave them the first commercial success worldwide and in the United States, almost more importantly. You know, because of the saturation of radio back then, and radio was a big thing back in the 80s. Mm-hmm. So they had Breaking the Law and Living After Midnight. Those came out on radio, and Priest took off from there. And, you know, the rest is history, as they say. British Steel is the first record I ever bought. It's not the first record I ever heard. But Living After Midnight's the first song I ever heard on the radio. So I was fascinated with that. So that's a little about British Steel, which came out this week. And, of course, Turbo. And as you said, we've talked a little too much about Turbo on this on this episode, according to Jeff. But that just came out. And I'm just going to read from Martin Popoff's book again. On the subject of the album's modern production, Rob explained to Hit Parader that we utilized the Sony digital recording system, and the results really belt out of the car radio or a home stereo. Using that system gave us a very clean yet very heavy quality, which made it sound like we were really there on tape. I had never heard anything quite so good before, especially by us. It truly is an amazing advance. So he disagrees with you, Doomy. of course, by this time, by this point, Rob was a self-admitted alcoholic and cocaine addict, partially due to the pressure to stay closeted while all the male-female mayhem took place on the wild road. Then his own private relationship world took a turn for the worse. He says, most of the men I'm attracted to are straight men, he told the Advocate. And the boy I was dating back then had a cocaine problem. We had one of those bombastic physical attractions, and there was a tremendous amount of violence. We used to beat the crap out of each other in the drunken and cocaine rages that we had. And one day we were fighting, and I left for my own safety and called a cab. As I was getting into the cab, he came up to me, ran up to me and said, "Look, I just want to let you know that I love you very much." And when he turned to walk away, I saw that he had a gun in his hand. Moments later, he put the gun to his head and killed himself.
God damn.
Oh, no.
Yeah. After that, Rob checked into a Phoenix rehab in January of 1986. He emerged 33 days later sober and staying that way. And he says, "I've been clean and sober since January 6th, 1986.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that's insane. I mean, all the stories in Rob's two books and then the stuff that Martin has compiled is just amazing. Well, they have 50 years of history, but especially Rob's own life. I mean, when you read about it and when he tells the stories, it's amazing. You know, imagine being the metal god and being closeted gay and not wanting to come out and be your true self because you think it'll hurt the band.
Right.
So, you know, you're basically sacrificing your happiness to make sure the band survives and the band, you know, is accepted. And, you know, in retrospect, we all look back and think, well, hey, you know, if he had come out, I don't think it would have been a big deal. But you have to understand they started in the 70s. And, right. You know, this is the 80s. It was just different times. So, but yeah, if you ever want to read anything, that the two Rob Halford books, Confess and Biblical, are must reading. I mean, they're so interesting, especially Confess, where he is so brutally honest. I mean, the honesty that he writes about, I don't know if I could do that. But some of the stuff that he says and has experienced is just truly mind-blowing. A great guy, man. Rob Halford, one of my idols.
Yep.
So those are some of the records that came out this week. So that's very interesting. What do you want to do, man? You want to do the spinner?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. So the spinner is a wheel that we spin that has years all the way from 1974 to present. 1974 being the year that Judas Priest's first album, Rockarola, came out until present, because present is present. And whatever year the wheel stops on, we each pick a record that was released in that year and discuss the record and see if there are any commonalities between the band we pick and Judas Priest. So let's start with our guest. Tracy, what album did you pick from the year 2001?
I picked Toxicity by System of a Down.
Very cool.
Yeah. I love this album. These guys are Armenian, and you can kind of hear once in a while in their songs a little bit of folkish. Their Armenian background. They sometimes use traditional instruments and stuff, and so I'm a big culture nerd, and so that really appeals to me. But you know, with Toxicity, just one thing that I do not like is if a band puts out an album and the first track sucks. Mm-hmm. And that is definitely not the case with Toxicity. They came out with the banger Prison Song, which is about the war on drugs, you know, and how drug money installs dictatorships around the world. And so definitely love that song. Chop Suey. I don't know why they named it Chop Suey, other than they probably couldn't name it what they really wanted to. But I found out an an interesting factoid that Chop Suey was Toxicity came out and debuted at number one on the American and Canadian charts.
Wow.
And Chop Suey was extremely popular, getting lots of radio play, and then 9/11 happened. And because of the lyrics, "I don't think you trust in my self-righteous suicide. I cry when angels deserve to die." Clear Channel pulled all their stations and said, "You can't play the song anymore." Because apparently Americans are just too sensitive and we couldn't handle it in the aftermath of 9/11. So that's another reason why I love that song. Of course, we were talking about Aerials earlier. I feel like that's kind of a spiritual type song. More getting into like getting into your own head and becoming one with the universe. And I think that's, at least for me, that's my interpretation of what they were getting at. But the title track, Toxicity, my favorite lyric is "eating seeds as a pastime activity."
Yeah, I love that too.
You know, just it's a basically a diatribe on, you know, our current modern urban living and what a joke it is. So but yeah, that's, so those are the ones that people know. I personally like the last track, Arto, which is totally instrumental. And you know, these guys, they, the way that they put together, how am I going to say this? The instrumentation, like in the beginning of Aerials, there's this beautiful cello, you know, that you don't expect to open a song, you know, by System of a Down, a cello. But Arto is all instrumental and they use folk instruments. And I mean, you can just tell that these guys have a different view of the United States because they're not from here. You know, and it really comes out in their music. I love the political aspects of their music. I'm a very political person. So anytime, you know, music can bash the government, I'm on board. Yeah. But definitely, I would say Prison Song is my favorite one on Toxicity, for sure.
It's an incredible song. It's an incredible album. Lyrically, it's brilliant. The Darian, is so creative in his songwriting and his guitar playing. I mean, he approaches the instrument in a 100% completely different way than anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was a hell of a choice for an album.
And then, I mean, there's no, Serge has such a distinctive voice. It almost, at certain points, it's operatic. Mm-hmm. And it just really shows his range, and their harmonies are impeccable.
Yeah.
So that's, yeah, that's my, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, he does have a unique voice.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's, yeah. Some of the trilling that he does with his R's and,
yes,
some of his ending notes, that's just, that hits the culture nerd in me, and I just love that. So,
excellent choice.
Thank you.
I guess we'll leave Jeff for last because he always has something really cool. And we'll slot me in the middle because I always have something off the wall. And
how off the wall are we going today, Jay?
This is no exception. My album from 2001 is Rock Steady by No Doubt. Now, okay. No Doubt formed in 1986 in Anaheim, and they pretty much have the original lineup still when they're making records. Anyway, Gwen Stefani, of course. Tony Cannell on bass, he's fucking rad. I love that, his sound on bass. Tom Dumont on guitar. Adrian Young, he's a killer drummer. Love his sound as well. The rhythm section sound for every No Doubt album is just incredible. Rocksteady's their fifth studio album. Now, Tragic Kingdom, their third studio record, and the one that really put them on the map, is probably a top 15 record of all time for me. Mm. I love Tragic Kingdom. Every song, all killer, no filler. They have a live DVD of them playing in L.A., doing all the Tragic Kingdom songs. It's just absolutely incredible. They sound so fucking good and tight. Now it's pretty poppy. They have some pop hits on Tragic Kingdom, like, you know, Don't Speak and Spiderwebs, but the deep cuts are killer as well. But anyway, Rocksteady is basically a pop record with a lot of ska and reggae mixed in and some rock and roll elements. Not as many rock and roll elements on Rocksteady as, you know, Tragic Kingdom and the first two records. But they're basically a ska, reggae, pop, punk. I don't know how you describe them, but I like to think of them as kind of a ska band, really. But Gwen Stefani's always awesome. But what really drives this band is the rhythm section of Tony Kanal and Adrian Young. It's tight, crisp. The bass sound on All No Doubt is always produced so well, always sounds so good. Even though it's a pop record, they still play their own instruments. So you're getting them playing their own instruments on the pop record. There's not a whole bunch of computer generated beats and all that. They don't really rely on that stuff because they're such good players. And I really like that about them. That really sets them apart as far as pop acts. That's one of the things I really enjoy about them. So one of the songs, Hella Good.
I hate that song so much. that is a terrible, terrible song. And I think I've heard some of the other songs on this album, and it's totally fine. I'm not going to shit out all over the album itself. But Hella Good is a terrible, terrible song, my friend.
I love it.
Okay.
Love Hella Good. Keep on dancing. Dun, 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 dun. Great Moog on this track. The sound is so heavy and deep. The bass really makes this song and this whole record, of course. Tony Kanal just sounds so amazing. I can't talk enough about him and his sound. And then, of course, Hey Baby, Hey Baby, Hey.
Oh, that song also sucks. Dude, why? I'm just going to mute myself for the rest of you talking. God damn, dude.
I love this record. I love this record. Great, catchy pop song. Lots of ska, reggae elements. The bass is fucking great. Love that song. A couple other notable songs would be Underneath It All. Great ska love ballad. And I really like Detective, which kind of reminds me of my favorite Blondie song, which is One Way or Another. Super creepy song. And Detective is kind of in that creeper element. But all in all, good pop record. I really enjoy it. I like every song on it. I see the look on Jeff's face, and I'm probably going to get a lot of shit for it. But I love No Doubt. Love their sound, really good record, very consistent record, although there are many genres represented, really. You know, there's rock, there's ska, there's, you know, love songs, mostly pop, but it's all consistent throughout the record. The bass, of course, is outrageously good. The production is all in all fantastic. Fun record, fun ska, pop, indie, I don't know what you call it, record. I really enjoy the shit out of it, and I listen to it if I'm in the mood. You know, I'm not always in the mood for stuff like that, but when I am, I'll throw that on. Love that record.
All right, Jay, you picked one that was really weird. I actually have seen No Doubt live. I saw them on like the Tragic Kingdom tour in like 1996 or something.
Excellent.
I don't dislike No Doubt. That album has two of their probably worst songs to me. So I'm sorry.
Hey, no need to be sorry, man. I knew I was going to get crap, especially from you.
Yeah, but, of course.
I love it. I think the whole album is hella good.
Oh, fuck you.
All right, keep on dancing, Jeff.
Well, my album is not going to make you dance. My album is a dark, depressing, gothic doom album from a band called Moonspell. Moonspell is one of my favorites. They are a Portuguese goth metal band with some heaviness, but they definitely bring in the emotion. The album is called Darkness and Hope. 2001, because it's a 2001 spinner. That's what we're doing. The album has 10 songs, and 9 of them are classics. And it also has like a bonus, some bonus tracks on it. One of them is a cover of an Ozzy Osbourne song, Mr. Crowley, which is incredible. And then they cover Love Will Tear Us Apart by Joy Division.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I did not, that was absolutely not planned, that Joy Division would come up, but they are a very important band to goth and to goth metal. Moonspell is, they are heavy on the atmosphere, heavy on the emotion, lots of creepiness. Fernando, the vocalist, is, he sounds like a fucking vampire from Transylvania sometimes. He's with the Portuguese accent and rolling his R's and shit. It is an incredible album. And it was the return to form for me. So Moonspell, Darkness and Hope, I think is their 5th album. They put out 2. Their first one Wolfheart, and then the second one was can't think of it. Sin Pecado, and they were brilliant. And then I got the names wrong. Damn it, Irreligious. And then Sin Pecado came out, and it kind of sucked. And then Butterfly came out, and it was kind of an industrial thing. Had weird effects on it. I did not like it whatsoever. And then this album came out, and it was like, oh, they're back, and they haven't left since. So, Darkness and Hope, my 2001 album.
Very cool. Any connection to Priest?
Absolutely none.
All right. Well, that makes 2 bands that I know of. I know your band, Tracy, has played different at different times, I think, on some bills, some festival bills that I've seen. I think they've played together. But anyway, yeah, no connection with No Doubt, and apparently no connection with Moonspell. So those were some really interesting choices.
Yeah.
All over the place. All over the place. I think you two are safe. But I'm going to get some shit, definitely. But hey, bring it on. I like I said, I think that album is hella good.
Oh, fuck you.
So
anytime you say that, I'm muting myself again.
So let's spin the spinner and see what year we're going to drop on when we have Sam on next week to give us the review of the show. So here we go. We are spinning. We're spinning the spinner! Jeez. 1993.
Oh, no, what am I almost going to be?
Oh, it's finally here. Jeff, your year is finally here.
Yeah, well,
we may have to devote a whole episode actually now. We may have to switch things around and devote a whole episode to Jeff on this one. He's been waiting with bated breath for 1993 to come up, and it finally has. And I didn't rig it. This is totally real. You heard the spinner spinning. The spinner! So, oh, you should see the look on Jeff's face. He is giddy.
Yep.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I'm going to be talking a lot next episode. Sam's going to take a back seat for a minute.
I'm sure he'll be happy to do it. Oh man, I don't know if I've ever seen you so happy, Jeff.
I was just happy it was going to be a good year, one that I could come up with the answer right away.
Exactly. Didn't even have to think about it. That's awesome. So as I was saying, we're going to have Sam with a review. And Sam's pretty much a part of the podcast. This will be his third time. And we only have, 10, 11 episodes out. And he's going to be on three of them. So, and Sam's a killer guy. Yeah. What a sharp guy. Always has interesting things to say. And he's, I'm sure, going to give us an awesome firsthand view of the show, of The Priest. The first show on the second leg here in the U.S. of A. So, Tracy, man, it's been a pleasure.
Oh, the pleasure's all mine. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, it was awesome. We had a great time. You have an interesting story with your vinyl addiction and hoarding.
Yes, that's what it is. It's an addiction.
So, anything you have coming up that you want to talk about that's exciting? Any shows upcoming or?
I don't have any shows upcoming. I wanted to go see on the 16th in 2 days, but I didn't find out about it in time. I wanted to go see Twin Tribes, which they are a dark wave band and a duo that I'm really, really getting into. So I'm sad that I'm going to miss that show, but I'm going to be making a lot of playlists with them in it. So Twin Tribes, check them out.
Will do.
Never heard of them. And you dark, what did you say their genre was?
Dark wave. Yeah.
I've never heard of that.
Not surprising. It's kind of obscure.
So what's
new
that
wave,
mean?
But dark. Really?
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, okay. Right. Okay. Well, that makes perfect sense.
Right. It's very, very gothy and mopey.
Perfect. Right down your alley.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty mopey too. But Jeff, you got Restless Spirit coming up.
Yep. That's about the only concert Maryland Death Fest coming up in May too. So I've got a nice busy month next month.
Excellent. Excellent. Awesome. Tracy, it's a pleasure. We'll have to have you on again. You're real interesting. So well-spoken.
Oh, thanks so much.
Just fun to have on. And I love exploring all the different kinds of music. Obviously, I picked a no doubt thing, but I love your expertise in different kind of music. And I think it's interesting to the listener as well to kind of encompass all kinds of music and talk about it. So I really enjoyed it. Good luck with your hoarding and your addiction there. did you have to put another room onto the house or anything?
It takes up pretty much half of my living room.
Oh shit!
We got the IKEA Calyx. I don't know if you are familiar with IKEA Calyx because they perfectly fit vinyl, mm-hmm. And we have I think 12 of those out there.
Wow.
So yeah, it's a lot.
That is awesome. You're gonna have to take a picture of that. I'm interested to see that. That is so cool. That's so cool. All right, well, we want to thank you for coming on. We had a hell of a time. Jeff, it was great as always.
Awesome talking to you as always, and an absolute pleasure talking to you, Tracy. Thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, my pleasure.
All right. We'd like to thank the Deep Dive Podcast Network, Martin Popoff, Rob Halford, and thank all of you Metal Maniacs for listening to the Judas Priest cast. We are out, and always keep defending the faith.